Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording the show on Thursday, July 15th, 2021. We are 2 days out from Disneyland's 66th birthday.
And doesn't she look great for her age, Jim?
Yeah, she's carrying herself very well. Speaking of animation-related news, it's on the actual birth date that the Coco scene, the new scene, gets added to PhilharMagic, right?
Oh, I forgot about that. I just got my tickets for the Boo Bash, so I'll have to look
Did
at
you
that.
Really?
I did, oh, yeah.
Wow. Isn't that Florida, though? Or
Sorry, not the Boo Bash, the Oogie Boogie Bash. Does that sound more appropriate? More
well, I what I know from bashing. Is that the next time you're going back to the park, or do you see yourself and Katie going there anytime this summer?
Well, they have the residence, the California residence pass, which I think is you have to go 3 times before September 20th or something. So
okay,
yeah, I'm not sure if I'll do that, but we have dinner reservations at Craftsman Bar, which is fabulous, Jim. Next time you come out, we got to go. Mm-hmm. So at least I'll have some sort of some Disneyland adjacent activity. But you're full in it, right?
You know, I'm hoping to get out to L.A. sometime soon and at least do Avengers Campus and that sort of thing. But right now, Florida is where I'll probably be headed first. Len wants to do a bunch of walk around the park things again. So I think we're looking at like the middle of October, you know, just after the 50th stuff has started. And then I think just literally yesterday, Tammy, the nice lady behind Storybook Destinations, Dad decided we're going to do a live event. And so that looks to be the middle of November, and we're kind of nailing the details into place on that one.
I heard that they actually wanted more of a live event from you and I, Jim. So I get, you know what? I'll do it. Fine, I'll do it, Jim. If I have to go, so help me, I will.
Well, that's, we will have to talk about this, because yes, so far it's just me and, well, maybe somebody else. So, all right, anyway, speaking of Storybook Destinations, news portion of today's episode of Fine Tuning is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. This week, we actually got a big character in the news. And what was your take on the Pixar teaser trailer for Turning Red?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was so great. I was very excited. It was sort of the opposite of the Encanto trailer where we were like, yeah, I mean, we're sort of excited about it in spite of the teaser, whereas this, I think the teaser fully encapsulates our excitement before seeing it. But what about you?
Initially, I was kind of intrigued in that I saw the trailer and it's like, wow, that looks like fun. And you know, you immediately get what the stakes are. And weren't you intrigued by the fact that for the first like 5 hours or so, nobody was actually talking about the character transforms into a giant red panda through a cloud of pink magic smoke. But they were talking about, did you see the diabetes port on the student in the background?
Yes, yes. We got roped into a diabetes conversation. I mean, there's nobody better as a diabetes ambassador than Jim Hill to talk about this. But yeah, that was really interesting.
It was. And Pixar tries so hard to represent the real world, what's yes. going on today. And so the fact that that was just so casually tossed in there sort of shows the thought and the care that, you know, they put into to making these films.
Yeah.
It was also kind of cool to watch all the Canadian animation fans sort of puff up with pride. It's like, Toronto, our place, look, yeah. our city.
Set in Toronto, set in the early 2000s, which I love, which also explains the Backstreet Boys.
Well, there you
song,
go.
You know?
The other thing I find fascinating about this is, face it, this is Domi Shi who done this, who did the Academy Award-winning short for Pixar for 2009, Bao. But the fact that she's gone from a teeny tiny itty-bitty you know, living dumpling character to now this giant, big, fluffy red panda who is also a emotionally overwrought 13-year-old girl, that sounds like a lot of fun. That's just a fun place to start off a movie at.
And also, I want to tell people who liked Burrow, which is the great Pixar short from last year, that Maddie Sheriff Ian, who directed that movie, is, I think, the production designer or head of story or something on Turning Red. So if you like that, you will like that. And she has said nothing but wonderful things about the production of Turning Red on social media. So, you know.
And again, I think you were the one who pointed out that this is the very first real post-John Lasseter project, right? Or
No, the first post-John Lasseter project is the movie after Lightyear. That we can't talk about yet. But I think it is very interesting that Domi went from that short in 2019. Mm-hmm. She becomes a part of the Brain Trust already, you know. And because it's like Luca, La Luna was 2011, I think, I want to say. So it's like, that is a long time between your short and your feature. Whereas she went from her short right into her feature, which is really cool, I think, and speaks to her talent and point of view and everything else.
She's been at Pixar since 2011 and a valued partner on both Inside Out and Toy Story 4. So she earned her shot.
Yeah.
As long as we're talking about things in the Pixar wheelhouse, we're now three episodes into Monsters at Work, which, again, you pointed out, not animated by Pixar.
No.
I'm blanking the name of the studio.
Icon Creative Studio and Dwarf Animation.
Okay. So a real credit to the folks at Icon, because around the launch of this new Disney Plus show, they've been rerunning Monsters, Inc. and Monsters University. And I know it does say a lot about how far we've come in regard to rendering and rigging and that sort of thing. But I honestly think the show a lot of times actually looks better than the original Monsters, Inc.
Right.
And I have to admit, I love Henry Winkler's work as Fritz, the head of MIFT. But also, I've gotten a real fondness for Lena Ubach's Catherine Cutter, the crab character, who's always talking about Tyler's coworkers who have died in horrible off-scene accidents. You know, the fact that, you know, you're here because, that guy, yeah, burned up. All we found was a claw.
I like the kind of suspicious guy with the multiple eyes and the wings. I think he's very funny.
Yeah, I think they've done a nice job with this one. And I don't know if you've seen the name of the one that's coming up, fourth episode next week, The Big Wabowski. I don't know what that's about, but, you know, looking forward to that. And also, I guess if we're talking about Pixar, you wanted to point out that Future Boy Conan, an early Miyazaki, this post-apocalyptic science fiction anime series debuted on NHK General April of 78. That's 43 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was his first show. It was really? before Lupin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But why Jim puts it in the Pixar wheelhouse is that Enrico Castarossa, who we had on the show a few weeks ago and who directed Luca, has cited this as a major influence on the current Pixar favorite. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun to finally watch that. And that's coming to us from G-Kids, who we know always does the best foreign animation releases. They just put Ernest and Celestine out on Blu-ray, which is like such a wonderful film. I think we've talked about that movie before, but...
But yeah,
it's great.
Speaking of Luca, I don't know if you saw this a couple of days ago, out ahead of episode 6 of Loki, but there was that great piece of fan art that was done where it was Owen Wilson's character on a jet ski that looked very suspiciously like a Vespa. He had on his back little kid versions of Loki and Sylvie, but it was all done with great affection in the Luca style.
Yes.
And I want that as a poster or a t-shirt right now. By the way, you saw episode 6 of Loki, right?
Of course.
And?
I loved it. I am. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite MCU show and one of my favorite MCU things.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because somebody recirculated some Comic-Con art from a few years ago of him in the 70s in New York. And it's like, well, that didn't quite happen, but obviously the cat is out of the bag and season 2 is on its way. So maybe he can kind of ping pong around different time periods and things like that. So, yeah. What did you think?
When you're in that last little bit of the show and, you know, you realize that, oh, dear Lord, you know, that you have been chugging to this point and you are now at the top of the hill of the roller coaster, and it's like, all right, come back in 2 years. You know, and it's just sort of like, I mean, don't get me wrong, enjoyed the ride, all I wanted was Owen Wilson on a jet ski, and I now have to wait for season two. Did you see that there's word out there that there's supposedly also a season three potentially in the works, so that this is going to go on?
From what I understand, it's the most popular thing that has ever been on Disney Plus. So
really?
It does not surprise me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Greatly enjoyed Tom Hiddleston's work in this. You know, likewise Owen Wilson. You know, happy to see this story continue. But at the same time, it's like, oh no. And if this is in fact Kevin Feige's plan, you know, if you think about the 1-2 punch of the past week or so, where you see that tail end scene from Black Widow and realize, oh, geez, now I got to go watch Hawkeye. Or for that matter, you watch the tail end of Loki and realize, well, I have to watch 10 brand new Marvel movies.
Yeah, I do worry that things are going to start becoming inaccessibly difficult to untangle. But
I am a little concerned about that myself. But at the same time, if you think about when the original Avengers ended and you got that weird little half smile from Thanos in the very, very end scene and realized that, oh my God, this is going to go on. I hear exactly what you're saying. I'm a little concerned about that. I have to watch this to watch that. And it doesn't necessarily sound like entertainment. That sounds kind of like homework, you know, but at the same time, it's just sort of like, all I wanted was Owen Wilson on a jet ski, you know? So... All right. Anyway, enough about that. We're just talking about G-Kids, and as long as we're giving G-Kids a shout-out, we should also mention the nice folks at Fathom, who are taking part in... Is this year officially Leica's 15th anniversary?
I believe so. Yeah, we talked about earlier that there's going to be new...
That's right. That's
new
right.
Releases. The
Blu-rays.
Leica edition mm-hmm. Blu-rays. But mm-hmm. yeah, now two of our favorites are coming back in the theaters.
Yeah, so we've got Coraline is going to be out in August, two showings on August 25th, 3 o'clock and a 7 o'clock performance. And I should also point out that this is Fathom Events partnering with Leica Studios, Shout Factory, and Park Circus. But the one, me personally, it's Paranorman. That's headed back to theaters on November 16th. And again, same thing, at 3 o'clock matinee, 7 o'clock. I'm going to have to drive up to Massachusetts North Shore to find a theater to see this in, because you lived in Connecticut. Did you ever actually get up like on a school field trip or that sort of thing to Salem, Massachusetts?
No, I never had. I would love to. I love witchy things. So, yeah.
But see, the thing is, the Paranorman crew nailed it. If you get up to Salem, the thing they got right was the whole New England town where something famous happened 300 years ago and how you kind of coasted on that. That's your tourism base.
Right.
And that whole faded, gray, beaten up neighborhood thing. I mean, that's real. They sent the research team there and they got photos of it. And in fact, I think I was doing the press interview with the production designer at one point and was mentioning that, you know, the scene where Norman is walking through the neighborhood and seeing all of the ghosts. And this is the first time as an audience you realize what his true gift is or curse. And I was like, my God, that looks like the street that my aunt lives on. And the production designer was like, send me your address. I could maybe confirm that, you know, because it was, I mentioned, well, you know, that she lives in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Like, yes, we went there. We shot Reference. So my Aunt Lorna, I love her, but she lives in kind of a sad neighborhood. So anyway, something happier. We also saw that Mark Cherry, the talented gentleman behind Hair Love, there's also a Hair Love series coming, right?
Yeah. From our friends at Sony Animation Studios. But yeah.
But he's also got another project going, this one over at Cartoon Network, about a dance studio, isn't it?
Yes, it's set in modern-day Chicago. It's called Batu. No relation to Galaxy's Edge, but because it is based on the French ballet term for beat.
Okay.
And it follows two gifted dancers in Chicago whose quote-unquote free spirit and individuality often leave them outsiders in the rigid world of mainstream dance. Mm-hmm. Which is something I think you and I can sympathize with, Jim, as we are outside the rigid world of mainstream podcasting.
You know, we normally do these on things on Zoom. So I'm sitting down. He can't see the tutu. But okay. But again, it seems to be described as a musical comedy series, which I hate to say this, but Central Park, you know, has really set the bar very high for that. In fact, we just saw that got 2 Emmy nominations for season 1. Stanley Tucci for voice work, likewise Titus Burgess.
Have they listened to Josh Gad's performance? I mean, I know he's a fan of the show, Hello Ava, but come on. He cracks me up in every single episode, Jim. All of his little asides and, oh, this is going to come back later and all that stuff. It's just, it leaves me in stitches, Jim.
And the sad part of it is I've reached the point in my life that when I look at the design for the character that Josh voices for the show, it's like, where does that guy get his clothes? I really want that shirt. It's a good look. Speaking of Emmy nominations, you didn't find them terribly exciting this time around, right?
Or... No, I didn't. Okay. I thought Central Park should have been in the best animated series category. I mean, do we really need The Simpsons and South Park and Bob's Burgers again for the 100th year? Can we not put a different show in there? But, you know, I was very happy that Primal was nominated in the Outstanding Animated Program section because I think you and I both love this show, and all the recognition it gets will help having many, many more years of Primal. Now that's a show, Jim, that we are waiting for season 2 with, like, bated breath.
Is it the Spark Shorts that just sent out the release? I realize that different shows can travel on different tracks, but did you see the Dino Hunter that sort of looks like a some more kid-friendly riff on Primal?
No, I did not see this. Did this go out like today or something?
Well, I want to say yesterday or thereabouts, some imagery came out, but it's somewhat more user-friendly, you know, a caveman riding on the back of a dinosaur, okay. You know, again, a T-Rex, but it's just sort of like, it's like, oh, well, I wouldn't want to be the parent who's like, oh, let's watch the, sit the kid down and watch the Dino Hunter and accidentally fire up a Primal. Don't do that. And speaking of press releases that came in, what do we make of this Meghan Markle now developing an animated series for Netflix?
I mean, she's working with a lot of great people, so it sounds like Rocket might be the one doing the animation who did Sherlock Gnomes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. It's sort of a female empowerment story, but, you know, you have veterans from Tangled and DC Superhero Girls and The Loud House all working on it. So I think it'll be fun. It's described as a family series that centers on the adventures of a 12-year-old girl who is inspired by a variety of influential women from history. So I imagine historical figures will come into the show and kind of help her along her journey, not unlike Messieurs Bill and Ted. So that's what I sort of...
Okay.
Like, yeah.
All right. I was going to go Doc McStuffins myself, but okay. You know, right. No, that's good. That's good. Well, and as long as we're talking about Netflix, we of course have to talk about the movie that you and I they were nice enough to slide us a screener on, the Trollhunters: Rise of the Titans. Drew and I are huge Guillermo del Toro fans, and we've actually been on the Trollhunters train since August or September of 2009. That first D23.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was when he was announcing his animation shingle with Disney. What is it? Disney Double Dare You?
Yep. Or? Yep. All the way back then. And the show didn't premiere until 2016. So we have been on this for a long time, Jim. We've been on the Trollhunter bandwagon.
But that's nothing compared to Dan and Kevin, right? The Hagemans?
Yes.
Who have been front and center. Guillermo personally recruited them for this project, right?
Yeah, they were on initially for the first run of Trollhunters episodes. They came back for this movie, and they've done some amazing stuff in the Lego universe and are working on a Star Trek show. So we get on into all of it, right?
Yep, hang in there, folks. If you right after this commercial, we're going to come back and we get to sit down and talk with the Hagemans about doing this film and likewise all the other stuff they've been working on. So hang in there. You've actually watched a lot of the Trollhunter episodes, right? Over the course of the show.
Oh yeah, I've seen every episode, Jim. Listen, I went to several Targets looking for toys when those came out. I mean, I
really,
yeah,
okay.
Yes.
Didn't they have a Blinky, the character that Kelsey Grammer voiced?
They had a Blinky. They had a bunch of Funko Pops that I picked up. The lack of merchandise was very frustrating, so I had to go search it out.
Netflix is only just now sort of doing the merch thing, but even then it's sort of carefully targeted merch aimed at moneyed folks. And speaking of which, I missed my window for my Wish Dragon pin. I have to double back and see if they have any of those prints left for Wish Dragon. I think at this point I can't get the autographed one, but the prints were amazing.
Yeah.
That's Studio Nucleus.
Gallery Nucleus in Alhambra, which we love them. They put on the great event for Onward that I got to be a part of and host. And yeah, I love them. They are just absolutely wonderful. So yeah, go pick it up. I'm sure there's prints left, Jim. For you, anything. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, I'll reach out because there's one I particularly love. But at the same, doubling back to the Trollhunters. Trollhunters actually got an art of book. And when you look at the craft and the thought and the design of sketching out this incredibly vivid world, which anybody who's a Guillermo del Toro fan knows, that's just part and parcel of what this guy does.
My first question is, how early did you know that this thing was going to wrap up with a giant action-packed blockbuster film?
Well, I mean, come on. This was how many years ago when we started Trollhunters? And, you know, we were told we signed a deal to do 52 episodes, right?
That seemed like forever. Like, that seemed like 52 episodes is a long, long time.
Right.
That's nuts. You know, like, I remember
it was around episode 48 or so, we get this word that Guillermo's like, it's a trilogy. And we're like, oh my goodness. Like, but at the same time though, we were like, I remember around 52, it was like, we love these characters. And we're like, these characters are so fantastic. And I remember like, we had some other things that we had to do. So we stepped off after the 52. But I remember thinking, I would love to go back to the Jim Lake Jr. story. You know, he's such a great character. And I know he had gone through all these transformations, but it was, you know, it wasn't until, when was it? It was much later. It was around Wizards, beginning of Wizards, I believe they go, there's going to be something bigger. And Kevin and I got so excited. It felt fantastic to get the old gang back together with Guillermo and Guggenheim. And it was great to have those conversations of, you know, what an opportunity to be able to close out a character and close out a series.
Yeah. Like, when does that ever happen? I mean, for writers for TV, you know, you never get to write an ending. I mean, it's so rare. And to let that be a movie and to really just find that ending. And endings are really hard to do right, right? Like most movies, endings suck. They don't land. This one, for me, like, my favorite thing about this movie is the ending. The very end is just like, it gets me.
Yeah. I mean, we have very strict spoiler guidelines that were outlined in a very...
Oh, yeah. Is this coming out before?
It'll be the week of, so we don't want to spoil anything.
Okay, we can't spoil anything. Okay.
But you do take big chances and do big dramatic things that, if you tried to do that on the Disney Channel, would never get past the, you know, idea phase. So were there any sort of guidelines you guys were sticking to in terms of things being too intense or, you know, because, you know, there's, I think this movie goes some unexpected places.
Good.
I mean,
good.
What's great is Guillermo always wears his heart on his sleeve. And this whole series is a series that wears its heart on its sleeve. And when you have these big characters and you have these great stakes, you know, they're not all going to make it out. And I think that's part of the greater journey and adventure of Jim Lake Jr. that, you know, in his adventure, as well as, you know, a young man growing into a man in life, they're going to lose allies, you know, or they may even risk their own life, you know. And so I don't want to spoil anything, but it's going to change the character. That's what the adventure does. I'm like walking on eggshells.
I don't know. For me, the fact that, again, you have three shows worth of characters, you know, and again, just the juggling of the cast, making sure everybody gets their moment in the spotlights, and it's done not gratuitously in service of story. I mean, this is a lot of plates to spin. And then on the scale of the action scenes and that sort of thing, I mean, this must have been crazy to have to script and board.
I remember when we started this, when I would watch those Marvel movies, you know, where it was the Avenger films and they're all, I'm like, oh, I would never enjoy writing that. Like, that seems like such a hit, you know. And then, of course, here comes our finale, and it's going to be pretty much an Avengers. All the characters, and like, we had to service so many characters that we loved, and the hardest thing is you just don't have enough time. You know, you're stuck. I don't know what the runtime is, but this is not a 3-hour movie. You know.
So. Yeah, there was characters on the sidelines. We're like, could we get this character in? We're like, no, yeah. We just don't have the time. But, you know, but that's a testament to Guillermo. You know, there's so many great characters throughout the series that it's fun to see them. And I think that was the fun, too, that we learned from the Avengers. It's great to see Thor mashed up with Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's seeing, you know, the characters from Three Below interact with wizards and seeing them interact with the characters from Tales of Arcadia. So it was a great time. It was a lot of fun to write. Every scene was a joy.
Well, Jim and I were talking earlier before you guys logged on about how, you know, this was one of two projects that Guillermo and team was working on at the time. I forget who, maybe Rodrigo was talking about it on Twitter one day, that there was going to be a Pacific Rim show, but this one kind of got the go ahead. But you guys finally got some kaiju into this in the finale. Yeah. So it's all coming full circle. Yeah. Was that sure. Always an idea that to bring these giant sort of elemental beasts in?
Well, that's all Guillermo, and that, you know, as a writer, you know, that also creatively was a challenge. Is how do you, you know, we've done, if when in Jago we had ninjas battling giants, you know, it's so difficult.
Yeah, we had just finished a season of the ninja battling titans, or not titans, yeah, but Goliaths, I think we called them. And we're like, oh, here we go again. How do we,
here we go again.
You know, I think Guillermo says, if you're going to rip somebody off, rip yourself off. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. But how do you do that? How do you, okay, we know there's going to be the spectacle. We know we can write the action and, oh my, you know, this is going to be just awesome. But then how do you create the character depth? How do you make sure that there's some human drama there? So it's not just the awesome visuals, but there's great character moments.
So. Well, but at the same time, I mean, you guys are crazy, crazy, you know, battle scenes and great character moments. And it's one thing to be doing then, but at the same time, you guys just signed the deal for Star Trek Prodigy. Yeah. So it's like you're landing one jumbo jet as you're getting another one off the ground. I mean,
well, but they're different sandboxes. It's like space. We had never really done space. And so we're like, oh, space. Like we're massive, like Trek and
Flash Gordon. I was going to say we're huge Trek fans. And also when we were little, the Flash Gordon movie came out, which I know not everyone loves. That is like dear to our heart. I mean,
massive adventures, you know, spikes coming out of arenas, Hawkmen, like this.
It's, I'm like, it doesn't get any salivated. Better, right? Yeah.
Sticking your hand, you know, in Trollhunters, you know, they do this in a lot of stories, but sticking your hand in a dark hole to see if you're going to live or not, you know, that's total Flash Gordon.
Yeah, totally Flash Gordon or Dune, right? Like, we're always just ripping off our favorite science fiction. You know?
Well, did the kind of pressure of wrapping up this three beloved series with this movie kind of prepare you at all for the kind of scrutiny of taking on something like Star Trek? Because I imagine that, you know, that vocal and that passionate a fan base would be something that you think about.
That's very, the Star Trek fan base, it's very intimidating to make sure that we don't piss people off, you know?
I think it's like, but I would say, I'm not too worried about. It's mostly focusing on our love of these characters, you know, and making sure that if you love them and then you protect them, and then if people attack you, you're like, I don't care, I love these characters, you know. Yes. It's
Trollhunters, I loved. You know, when we were writing those 52 episodes, I would watch early animatics, and I'd have tears in my eyes of when Jim was saving Claire. And Claire discovers that he's a troll hunter for the first time. And there's these moments that really, really, you know, and for Prodigy, for Star Trek, what I love is, you know, Trollhunters, that's Guillermo's baby. He created it. You know, we're there working with Mark Guggenheim and you know, you're sharing the sandbox with all these other amazing people. this is like Prodigy is one of the first times where this is our baby that we get to. And I, you know, I know this is not a Prodigy interview, but I just can't wait. I can't wait for people to see what we're doing.
Yeah.
Can't spoil it, but I can't.
It's wait. All, it's all of our love of space and Star Trek put into one show.
I love that. Well, Jim and I were also talking about, you know, how visually sophisticated the Trollhunters movie looks, because correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like a little bit more money for simulation, a little bit more money for hair, all these kind of things. Was that also kind of a conceit going into it, that it was going to kind of look bigger too?
Well, I don't know about the money, but I mean, in animation, every iteration, you know, there's so many technology advances. And I think you look at any animated show and the first season, when you're watching it, you're like, this looks great. But then you watch season two, you're like, this looks even better. Season three looks even better. And so, especially because when you have the animators who know these characters now and these, you know, effect animation houses, the more these characters come alive, the more it feels, you know, and also as a movie, you want to go even bigger. You want to go, how do we make this into a movie? How do we give it that theatrical experience?
And I think we're so fortunate with Trollhunters and all the other, the trilogy of shows, we're now at a place where we're blurring the line between animated television shows and animated features, right? And so when we were told we got to do a feature now, we're like, well, how do we go bigger? Like we went as big as we could with Trollhunters, you know?
Yeah, we didn't hold back.
Speaking of bigger, I have to say, Kelsey Grammer's voice work in this as Blinky, it is the most Kelsey Grammer performance I've ever heard. You know, just sort of like, you know, you look back over the body of this guy's career, and he's always been dramatic, he's always been florid, but how did you get this level of performance out of him?
He's great. I remember anytime, like Guillermo would say, anytime there's a tricky piece of exposition to be said, to like have Kelsey say it. Like he just, everything he says just sounds fantastic. Yeah. So he was probably one of the most fun characters to write for in the whole series.
And I remember early on, he just nailed the character. It was just, you know, it took very little time to find that character. He just got it.
Well, speaking of what you were just talking about, your love of Flash Gordon. So who brought Brian Blessed in?
That was us.
We're like, I'm like, we got to get someone like Brian Blessed or Brian.
And that was literally, we wanted, we were there. And I remember at that moment, we were trying to figure out the voice and our love of Flash Gordon. We said, let's get Brian in there. And I remember Brooke Chalmers was recording and he's like, the dude is just like, he's just as young as ever. I swear, Brian. And we had heard a fun fact where he did the original Tarzan yodel and like some just, you know, his pipes are great. I love Brian. I love that we were able to get him into the Trollhunters world.
Well, is there any particular aspect, obviously without spoiling anything, that you are like so excited about people seeing who have gone on this? God, I don't know. When did the first season of Trollhunters premiere? It feels like 15 years ago, but it's an amazing journey.
It's not that we just had our 10-year anniversary for Ninjago. So this has to have been, it's under 10 years. I might tip my hat to all the other producers of all DreamWorks. The shows. Like DreamWorks, I mean, with all the trilogy of shows that they've unveiled so quickly. And
trilogy and a movie. Quality.
Yeah.
No, we're excited for, again, I think the ending. I think the, you know, Guillermo had this beautiful ending very early on. And, you know, our goal was to write toward that. And I think, I remember, I haven't seen the ending in the final cut form because I wanted to save it till like it comes out and I view it. I'm like, I saw some early animatics, so I know, but like, I didn't see any finalized animation. They showed it. They go, hey, do you want to look at it? I said, no, I gotta experience it. Cause it's emotional for us to be there from the beginning and then to see it end, you know?
That's what makes a story, you know, sit with you and never leave you, right? When you're growing up, you see that that moment in a story that just breaks your heart, you know, and you don't expect it. And you're suddenly crying in a movie that you weren't expecting. You went to see adventure or whatever, right? And we really wanted Troll Hunters in this ending to really resonate with people, you know, to feel right, to be a very satisfying of a conclusion that this is the end. But just to go straight for the heart, and so that people will always look back at this, you know, trilogy as, you know, part of their childhood, you know,
or their mid to late 30s as well.
Yeah.
We also went on this journey with you.
honestly, like, you know, we write for ourselves, right? You know, and if I'm thrilled by this action scene, if I'm laughing at this joke, or if I'm being moved to tears, I'm like, yes, like this is working. And that's what with Troll Hunters or with Star Trek Prodigy, we're always, you know, yes, we're writing something to introduce kids to Star Trek, let's say, or to Troll Hunters. But like, when people always ask, like, well, who's your audience? I'm like, everyone. Like, that is who I want. That's who I want.
Can you talk about working with Guillermo a little bit? Because he's obviously such an animation fan. I remember going to his, you know, the exhibit here, and he had original Ivan Earle, you know, pieces on the wall and stuff like that. And obviously, Troll Hunters began as a project at Disney when he was going to have a, you know, his own animated shingle. So could you talk a little bit about what it's like working with him, his kind of enthusiasm for animation and all of that?
I love Guillermo. I mean, I love a man who thinks up fantastic creatures and wears his heart on his sleeve. And I'm like, that's spectacle and that's emotion. And you put those things together, you know, and that's what Troll Hunters is, you know, crazy ass creatures and some great drama, emotional drama.
And I love people. I like people. Like, he's so kind, but he's also like, you know, only the best is good enough. And that's totally our mandate as well, you know? And so we're always, and he's always hard on things to make sure things are the very best that they can be.
Right.
Yeah. You talked a moment or two ago about writing for, obviously, Kelsey and Brian. So just to pivot to Prodigy, what's it like to write for Kate Mulgrew? Again, another great actress, a wonderful, you know, and a great voice.
Oh my goodness. She's fantastic. The best thing is her in the recording studio. Like, she's the fastest person because she knows the voice so well. She's like, boom, 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 boom. She's like, that's it.
Yeah, it's really very little coaching with her of how she should deliver a line. Like, she just gets it. And she's so amazing.
It was very intimidating at first, but like the first moment we met her, she puts you at ease. You know, her first line to us is, "What are we drinking, boys?" And I'm like, oh, I just love this
woman. Oh my God, you love her right away. Yeah. And she's such a huge supporter. Yeah.
I love that. Well, I remember, you know, I forget where in the kind of lifespan of the show, but Guillermo was sort of teasing that there were connections to other things that he had done, or, you know, some kind of, you know, Guillermo del Toro macro verse. Can you speak to that and maybe point out any kind of Easter eggs that maybe people have missed along the way?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, Gun Robot was always an homage to Pacific Rim.
But that was us, right? Weren't we kind of
Yeah, but we were kind of making fun. We were taking the piss out of giant robots, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, yeah, we love a giant robot with a heart of gold, you know, but he's still yet just a giant gun. You know, he's a hired gun.
Celebration of giant robots. Well, also
there was a lot of just little jokes in the writer's room that, you know, we all found ways to sneak him in. And it was so much fun. Like the gun robot, voicemail and, God, wasn't there a trailer of the house? What was the house one, Kevin?
The what?
I don't know. There was like an evil house movie. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. I miss that writer's room. Ashley Bradley and Aaron Walkey and Chad Quant and Lila. It was fantastic.
Without giving anything away, there is a possibility for further troll hunting adventures. Should Guillermo call you in 5 years and say, we got a green light for another 52. You guys in, or are you sitting this one out?
I don't know. I think this is the ending. This in my mind,
you know, it's so beautiful.
There's always ways to bring it back.
Yes, it's true.
I would say
it's true, but I have to say, as a writer, one of the greatest joys I find is being able to go into a world of trolls and teenagers in a small town, and then to suddenly jump onto a ship with hologram Janeway and a bunch of alien kids. It's so enjoyable to be able to, or write, you know, write a movie of scary stories to tell in the dark, or a Lego movie, whatever. It's just so enjoyable to be able to switch gears, you know, and to explore these different sandboxes.
Right.
For me, I guess the thing that intrigues me is that in the first 5 minutes, you do the end of every big action film, a summer blockbuster. You wreck a train in Times Square, and that's where you start. You know, just
yeah. Well, it's a movie, right? It's we were talking about this. This is the movie version. We're like, well, we got to start big, and for us, you know, we love the Indiana Jones movies, serialized adventure movies. You always got to start
James Bond. That's what makes James Bond movies fantastic.
James Bond.
You're like, what's the first action set piece? And it's fantastic. And it pulls you right into. That's all the exposition.
And you're sold. You're like, I'm ready. Take me away. And then you can do your exposition, you know, and you get to start to enjoy the characters a little bit. And it's sort of like this little, don't worry, folks. This is an adventure film. There's going to be adventure here, you know.
Well, having worked with Guillermo for so long and on all these different projects, do you ever go, so Guillermo, what's going on with that Haunted Mansion movie? You know, I think,
we've the said bros that. Could do oh, it. We okay. have said that. We have said that. I think years ago,
that was with Scary Stories. He's like, man, I like scary. I want you guys on Scary Stories.
Yeah, I think he already had a writer or something on that, but he brought us on board of Scary Stories. But yeah, I love working with that man. He's great. It's like Dan was saying, his heart's on his sleeve. I think a lot of people that I've come across in Hollywood, they don't focus on the heart. They're focusing on the spectacle or the star power or the this or that. It's just so fleeting, you know, and you know, heart always comes first, and then the special effects or the this or that.
Well, you know, Jim and I were also big fans of Croods too, and loved how that came out.
Thank you.
Talk
thank
about
you.
What that experience was like, and you know, he obviously as nerds, Jim and I are like, what became of the Chris Sanders version? You know, like, and he obviously had he has a story.
You know, Guillermo's actually part of that story as well of how we got there. So we were busy on working on Trollhunters and Scary Stories, and then Katzenberg called up and wanted to know if we would take a look at a cut of Croods or to help out or something. And we were like, I'm sorry, we're too busy. We're putting all of our effort on Guillermo's, you know.
Yeah, it's babies. So hard to do a 52 episode show and then a movie on the side, much less, hey, look at this other movie and try to fix it. We're like,
And so we said no, because we just didn't have the time. And then Katzenberg called up Guillermo and he's like, can I borrow the Hageman for 2 weeks? And can I borrow the Hagemans for 3 weeks? And Guillermo says, you can have them for 2 weeks. And so all of a sudden we're like,
so we were sold. We felt like
we were like horse traded or something. And so what are we going to say?
We can't.
And so we went in there just simply thinking this will just be a 2 week thing. We'll give her ideas. And then it kind of got us pregnant where we're like, we really, really like this idea of these rival families, so to speak.
Croods meeting another family.
And then once we were pregnant, we're like, okay. It's, you know, this is a series that, it has heart. It's about a family, you know, there's deep heart in it, and it works. It's a
fantastic world. Yeah. Can I share one little tidbit too? There was an early time when Dan and I were talking about this family that the Croods are going to meet. And we're like, well, what's their names? Like Croods, like, do they all have really just weird crude names? And I come back into the office. I go, Dan, I know the name of this family. And Dan's like, no, Kev, last night I figured out the name of this family. And so we're like, all right, we're both equally excited about our own ideas. We're like, okay, what is it? You know, and I go, the Bettermans. And he's like, that's exactly the name that he thought of.
Yeah, and so honestly.
We're like, we're Hagemans.
Well, I think
Hagemans.
Our last name is
we're
Hagemans.
Like, they're the Bettermans. You know, it's perfect. It's like...
I know we're over a little bit, so I just wanted to thank you guys for taking the time to chat with us. And it's so fun to have gone on this, you know, Troll Hunters journey from the beginning and to see it wrap up so beautifully. Mm-hmm. It's really, really wonderful. So
absolutely. Yeah.
You guys should be very
well, thank you guys. I'm excited to watch it too. So
no, we look forward to, we'll have to do this again once Star Trek Prodigy comes out, because I can't wait. Are you guys Trek fans? Are you guys Trek fans at all? Or
yeah, absolutely. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. I really look forward. We got to have a conversation about that once you've seen it.
Cool. All right. Well, great, guys. Well, thank you so much for chatting. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
Take
it.
Take care.
Thanks again to the nice folks at DreamWorks for allowing us to talk with the Hagemans. How excited are we now about getting to see Star Trek Prodigy?
Oh, so excited. Especially, I mean, I was excited before, but now I'm really excited. Yeah, I mean, they really have done it all. I mean, they've done features, they've done TV, they've worked on the Lego property, they've worked on, you know, the Croods property. It's really, it's an amazing kind of run that they've had.
They seem to want to talk to us again when the Star Trek thing gets going, and I'd love to talk with them about, they wrote the treatment for the Lego movie and the treatment for the Hotel Transylvania, and I'd love to, you know, because Hotel Transylvania went through so many different iterations. I mean, I still, to this day, the pitch for the film where Dracula had a hotel and Frankenstein had a hotel and they fought for guests. And it's like, really? Really? That was going to be the movie?
I mean, kids love businesses fighting with each other. I mean, that's really compelling to little kids.
That just reminds me of the jokes from when The Phantom Menace came out. Because, of course, you know, that's what you want to see when you go into
Trade Wars, yeah.
Trade Wars, oh, yes, okay. You know, come on, let's get some popcorn and soda and go see that. So, yes, that's a very interesting point. But on the other hand, I have to say that when it comes to behind-the-scenes stuff, but stuff that would seem to be dry and you manage with the Light the Fuse podcast, when you bring in these folks who actually work on the film, the writers, the directors, you get them to tell so many amazing, really fun, compelling stories.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes kind of a game of telephone where, you know, oh, have you talked to so-and-so? Let me put you in touch, you know, and that really helps go a long way in terms of people trusting us. And they also know that we're such huge fans and are so reverential to the franchise and love it so much. So it helps us get some good stuff. So
we're now in the depth of summer blockbuster season. Who have we got coming up now?
Speaking of Guillermo del Toro, God, I'm fully in Guillermo del Toro world. But we talked to Dan Lawson, who is a brilliant cinematographer who shot so many of Guillermo's films. And we are finishing up our interview with him. And then we've got David Leitch, who co-directed the first John Wick and who directed these little art house movies like Deadpool 2 and Hobbs and Shaw. So we're talking to him. And
you are killing me.
Yeah,
oh my
so
God.
We got some good stuff coming up. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, we got and please listen to the Brian De Palma interview if you haven't done that. It was really special. So, yeah.
Over on our side, we got some stuff, too. We got Disney Dish with Len Testa earlier this week. Aaron and I recorded a brand new Marvelous Disney where we had to talk about Black Widow. We had to talk about Loki. It's the longest show we've ever done. So bring a pillow, bring a blanket. You're going to be there for a while. I want to thank you again for listening. Drew and I will be back soon with a brand new show.